Blog Talk Radio.
This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole, Hollywood's bad guy, and so much more. Actor, talent manager, producer, and more. Now he's sitting down with today's top newsmakers from entertainment, politics, pop culture, and beyond. This is One-on-One with Jasper Cole.
Howdy, 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 everyone, and welcome to One-on-One with Jasper Cole. This is your host, Mr. Jasper Cole, and we are coming to you live from Palm Springs, California. It was only about 97 degrees here today, so it's a little balmy. No, actually, it's so dry you could spit and it would evaporate. So listen, everyone, I'm so excited because we're starting a very first episode tonight. It's called True Crime. A lot of you may or may not know, but I'm a true crime junkie of, you know, Dateline and 48 Hours and everything on Oxygen and so forth and so on. So we are going to be joined at 6:20 by Justin Lowe, who owns Full Genomes Corporation, and he is a forensic genealogy expert. And we're going to be talking all about how they are used to, you know, to solve crimes and do all of that great stuff. So it's this new technology that you probably have seen, the Golden State Killer. It was used to try. So I'm going to try to do one show a month where we tackle various true crime subjects. But in the meantime, there is nothing criminal about this next person I'm about to introduce. I couldn't do it. Well, I probably could do it, but I'd rather not do this show without my co-host, Mr. Ralph.
Hello.
Hey, Ralph.
Hey, Jasper, can you hear me?
Not only can I hear you, I can see you.
Excellent. Oh, God, this is so nice to be with you. I appreciate you always including me every week and Planet Eartha. I'd like to let you know that 2 days ago was my 63rd birthday,
yes.
And to start my day, Jasper Cole, the one and only, called me first thing in the morning and sang happy birthday to me. And there was no cash or real estate involved, and he did it with enthusiasm.
Yes, well, everybody, all the listeners would like to wish Ralph a belated happy 63rd birthday. 2 years to Medicare, as we call it.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. How has the week been going for you?
You know, it's one of those weeks where I just can't keep my day straight. All day today, I thought, was Wednesday. I've been a day off and a dollar short all week. But it's great. I mean, no complaints, you know? All good.
Excellent.
How about, did you have a good birthday?
Yeah, Rose and I stayed here at home, of course, and Ronnie was so nice to bring me a slice of chocolate six-layer cake. So Rose and I shared that, and then I got a lovely gift basket from Cookie Good, a box of assorted cookies. That are all, each one is more delicious than the other one. And,
oh my God!
And I made fried chicken because I love comfort food, and it was great. It was a very nice day. You know, actually, you know, it's so funny. You know, I always say I like to be included, and I totally was included on Facebook and Instagram with all the outpouring of love. And I always take a moment to remember. It's nice to be thought of and nice to be included that way. I mean, I had almost 500 responses and comments to me, you know, so that was just really nice that people just reach out like that. And so I feel very fulfilled. I'm grateful to be healthy and just maneuvering day by day as we get closer to ending or curtailing this pandemic.
Can imagine if you got $50 from every all 500 of those people. Like every time they wished you charge, they had to monetize that. Wouldn't that be
like
nice?
Every time I got a like? I know. Wouldn't that be fierce? That would be so.
And then
like
you would have like.
Likes.
Yeah, like Facebook would keep a running tab, right? And then at the end of maybe every month, you get paid. And then the sad
exactly.
part is like.
And even.
Well, the sad part is like you go to the end of the month and it's like negative $30. Which means
no
likes.
Because they got, or they unliked you, and it was like, bitch, once you hit like, that's $50, Garrett, don't even.
Because listen, you know how it is. You know how it is with, quote, friends. Everything's good until money gets involved. And then it's like, oh, no, no, no.
You were too funny. Well, you know, you and I were talking last week about, you know, it's just a matter of time before there is fraud with the vaccination cards. And I was reading somewhere online that they were selling these bitches for hundreds of dollars on fucking eBay. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And all to, like, okay, so you spend $200 to get a car. This is like when you used to forge your driver's license to prove your age, right? So you have this forged vaccination card, and then you go somewhere and they go, are you vaccinated? And you show them the card and you really aren't. It's like, well, that's just not going to help us get to closing this pandemic anytime soon.
No, not at all. You know, isn't it amazing there's always going to be some fucked up person that ruins it for my mom used to say, we just can't have anything nice, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. It's just like everything, I mean, God. You know, I was watching America's Most Wanted, and the story that I was watching was about this couple whom had bilked dollars out of all of these elderly people, and they lost their savings and they lost their house. And I just thought, how can people do that? You know, like, I'm just so glad that I'm here to protect Rose. And the thing is, I've been a sucker, too. I've totally been a victim and been like, oh, God, I can't believe I fell for this. But now I am just really stringent. And unfortunately, in our society, it's like, you know, like when people call you now, Jasper, on the phone, and you may not answer the phone because you don't recognize the number. That's our new society now. There's so much spam and so much badness out there. You don't want to answer the phone unless it shows the name and you know exactly who it is, because it's like, well, if it's really legitimate, you will leave a message. And you know,
well, exactly. And you know, the funny thing is, I put one of those apps on my phone that supposedly, you know, supposed to like weed out the spam calls. The problem is it will just randomly silence like something you need to get. Suddenly I'll have voice messages and I'm thinking, I never got this. I never saw the call. So it's a weird thing. Like, I don't know, half the time these spam apps don't really do their job, but you're right. If I don't know who it is, I don't answer regardless.
Well, you know, and it's hard for you because you deal with so many people. Okay, gone are the days where, you know, if a 212 number comes in, okay, we know that's Manhattan. If it's 323 or 310, we know it's Los Angeles. But there's so many prefixes now that are like, you know, 834, and it's like, well, where the fuck is that? But sometimes you especially have to answer it because it could be a casting director or a producer. You know, you have your, you know, because, you know, from your IMRU interview, you wear so many hats, more hats uh-huh. than Queen Elizabeth. You just never know who might be calling you. So sometimes people, you know, the call that you decide not to answer is the call where they offered Denise $1 million to come and do one day on a show.
how about offering Ralph Cole Jr. Half of that? To come.
Yeah, oh God, yes, absolutely. When I am back, I will be ready to go. Right now I'm scrambling. I feel like I can't believe my mother, who's 92, doesn't have her vaccine yet. And I know she could have had it, but you know, and people have gotten on me about, Ralph, forget convenience. I was like, yeah, I'm still, because I'm the only person around, Rose, if I can go around the corner and just have one-on-one interaction with the pharmacist and my mother, I'm still hoping for that. But I am researching how to go to a drive-thru place now to get the J&J one. And because I wanted to be vaccinated already, even though, you know, like a friend of mine was like, oh, you know, with all these variants out there, it's just really, really dangerous. And, she, you know, she just has to be vaccinated. I'm like, okay, relax 1 second. That's all true. My mother is not out of the house. I'm the only one around my mother. I'm fully vaccinated. I tested negative, but that was in January, so who knows. But presumably I'm still negative. So Rose is not going to get a variant unless I brought it into the house, and I haven't left the house for 8 days,
right.
You know, right now. So for me, it'd be different if, like, Rose was going to a senior center on a regular basis. It'd be like, okay, she needs to be vaccinated because she's going to be around these other people. But she's not around anybody else. So I'm still, you know, I want the J&J one. You know, we've all – and I know people say, just get whatever one you can get. Get whatever one you can get. And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want my mother to get the Moderna one. More, people seem to have more side effects than the Moderna one, and I don't have to go back twice. You know,
well, that's
I want
the whole
to
point
be,
of your situation. You're trying to make it – one stop for Rose. So you're right. I don't blame you. I mean, I was going to share with everyone, it's funny how the milestone in our life now, this past Sunday night, Dennis and I finally went out to a restaurant for the first time in over a year with, ironically, we planned it with our friend Greg Richmond, who was also the last person we had dinner with a year ago before the pandemic. The three of us, we just remembered that one day during the year, like, oh my God, that was our last. So we did, we went out to a restaurant here that's open on all four sides, like the walls roll up, you know. It felt really safe and it just felt great. And the funny thing was, it did not feel, I guess it's like riding a bike. You just suddenly are like, oh, I'm back in a restaurant. However, we did it on that Sunday. We've had no desire to go out anywhere else this week, you know? I mean, it'll probably just be a special occasion kind of thing, but we still don't have that need to, like, oh, let's just pop over here for lunch, you know? We'll just still go. Like, today I just went and ordered the food and picked it up. So, well, right before we came on the air, Ralph, my husband, you know, Dennis, I think, I don't know if he did this on purpose, so to scare you and I, but he sends me this text that the state of Michigan has 258 confirmed cases of coronavirus from people who've been fully vaccinated. So I have not researched this yet. I have not seen, I'm not able to go on because I'm hooked up to so many, the iPhone, you know, I don't want to lose the board on the computer, but I'm hoping to hell that's something that's not, you know, real, because I'm like, what? That'll be a major.
But where did Dennis read it?
I had no idea. He texted me from the other room, and I was already hooked up for the show, so I didn't get the chance to even. So I'm just putting that out there that in case you hear anything like that, who knows if any of this is true. I know that Canada, unfortunately, is on lockdown again because a majority of the vaccinations that they received were faulty. They weren't 100% correct. So now there's some skepticism right now with some of the vaccines. I don't know that that's happened in this country, but that's what's just hitting the airwaves today. So,
well, and I saw in a news article the other day that J&J had to throw away 15 million doses because their manufacturer, wherever their manufacturer was, fucked up, and they had to throw them away. And I'm like, oh, God, you know. And then I made the mistake of just reading all, you know, people post all this stuff on Facebook and I click on it and I start reading it. And the AstraZeneca one, they had to stop doing that because it was causing blood clots. Then there's some fucking Russian one, you know, and it's like, what the fuck is going in our arm?
Well, the thing I don't know which ones, you know, I don't know which companies Canada got. It's interesting, you know, Italy's back on lockdown and I've been asking people, did they not get the same vaccination companies we're using, or did they not get the supply that we got? I don't know. I don't know what the story is on that yet.
Well, and Paris is on lockdown too. They have a curfew at 7 p.m. You know,
right.
And what I was reading after I read, after I was bombarded with all this different information, I concluded, like, okay, the United States is a little bit more on top of it. These European countries, like the Netherlands, and they all seem to be lurking, and they've
mm-hmm.
had a shit show in trying to get the vaccines to the people, you know, and it's just. Yes, a lot of progress is being made and with these vaccines, but I didn't understand why Europe was so, like, I mean, how fucked up, you know, like Paris, now you're saying Italy and Canada, the whole country of Canada is on lockdown again?
Well, they're back on stringent, you know, they've been so stringent anyway about quarantining, but there's been some problems with the vaccinations that they got. But I wanted to boomerang because I have been wanting to share this information with Ralph and Planet Eartha, but now I can, but now I'm concerned again. So I have booked a job and it takes me to the state of Georgia. So I got my tickets to go to Georgia yesterday, and Delta Airlines is the only airlines right now that is doing, if you fly in first class, they block out the seat next to you if you're traveling alone. So there's nobody to the right of me next, and there's nobody to the aisle seat. So I'm kind of like by myself. So the best thing about this booking is I get to go home and work for 2 days and spend 3 days with my father, who I've not seen in 3 years almost.
Wow, congratulations on your job. Can you talk about the job?
I can't say the details. It was a straight offer from my Atlanta agent, but it's people that I auditioned before for. It's a well-known show that is, you know, that's out there, that's a hit, and it's a perfect 2-day guest star. And then I fly in on a Thursday night. I work Friday, Saturday, and then I have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday to spend with my dad.
This is excellent, Jasper. How exciting.
Well, I was all really excited, especially the way the airline thing was. I mean, I went through my travel agent at AAA like I always do, and he was just like, Jasper, you're going to be so excited. You're protected, you know. You've got your vaccination, and now there's no one on either side of you. And he got it for me going and coming, which is great, flying there and
now
coming back.
You're sitting on the aisle?
Well, I'm sitting on the aisle because there will be nobody on the other aisle or to my right by the window. You know, there's only two. In first class, you just have two seats. So I feel really protected. I did. I felt protected until I heard this potential gossip about vaccinations in Michigan where people got COVID. So let's just hope that's not the case.
But you're still going to be all masked and everything getting on the beach.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Still mask and sanitized and all that. But you know, a lot American Airlines and a lot of other airlines, they just pack them in side by side. I mean, we've had friends, flying over the last year, and there's no separation.
Well, a friend of mine wrote me today, Delta Airlines is blocking out that middle seat, but just until the end of the month or something.
Yeah, it's just till May 1st in coach, and then in first class. I mean, listen, I would pay anything right now to avoid. I'm just trying to stay as safe as possible. So,
I agree.
You know, because I have to be a local hire in Atlanta. So for people listening, that means that you have to get yourself there and put yourself up, be able to put yourself up. So, but it's kind of great because I've been wanting this to happen and I've been wanting to see my father. So, yeah. But off air, Ralph, I'll tell you more about it because you know how it is. You can't talk about it.
Wait, I'm sorry, I missed.
I said later off air, I'll Are you there, Ralph?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there you are. Did you come off the other one?
I called in.
Radio. Okay.
Goodbye. Okay, call connected. Okay, so I'm
there
disconnected
you are. You're
on my phone. Okay,
you
good.
You sound really good. This one's really clear.
Well, now I'm on my desktop, but when I called in for 6 o'clock, I couldn't get on. So I had a call on my phone. But now we've been...
The quality is like 200% different. It's amazing.
Really?
Because
usually when we're on our phone, you always like the quality.
Yeah, but all of a sudden now I'm like, oh, my God, I can totally hear the difference.
But now I called in on the desktop and I got through. For the first time, I couldn't get through. So you've been on the
Direct Connect tonight. Yeah, no problem.
Okay, well, I'm glad I tried it again and that the sound is better. Now, what were you saying off air that you'll do what?
I said off air I'll tell you more about the job. Because,
well,
you know,
yeah,
how it is. I can't say anything. I signed an NDA. Yeah.
No, I'm so excited for you. So, and I love that it's a direct offer.
Me too. And I like that I auditioned for them before.
The casting, the producers. Now, when do you leave?
I leave Thursday the 29th. So we won't have a show that night. And then I come back on Tuesday the 3rd or whatever, 4th.
Well,
whatever
you were planning on leaving May 1st anyway. So this is...
I mean, it's, again, tell God your plans, right?
Right.
That's
oh, God,
amazing.
I can't wait to hear about it. That's really super exciting. I love you booking a job like that. And, you'll tell me. I'm so eager to hear it all.
Well, I will. And listen, I want to remind everyone, they can follow Ralph at Ralph Cole Jr. on all the platforms. We are going to jump right over quickly to our true crime guest tonight. But Ralph, I'm sending you all the love in the world. Thank you. Thank you so much
for
doing this. And we will see you, of course, Ralph, next week, same time, same place. And we love you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye, Planet Earth. Have a great show with Justin.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, everyone. That's the wonderful Ralph Cole Jr. Top of the show, we're very excited. This is our first we're calling it true crime episode, and we couldn't be more thrilled than to kick off our first episode with a truly spectacular guest, Justin Lowe. His company is called Full Genomes Corporation. At this time, please welcome Mr. Justin Lowe. Hello there. Hey, buddy. How are you?
No, not bad. How you doing out there in this pandemic, or soon to be over pandemic, I should say?
Oh my God! Right. Well, my co-host Ralph and I were just, I don't know if you heard a little, but he and I mm-hmm. usually talk about the pandemic, and we were just right before I came on the air. My husband texted me a thing saying something about some cases in Michigan where people had been fully vaccinated, but they got coronavirus. So I don't know. I wasn't able to check it or do anything, but I'm hoping that's not the case. That would be a total nightmare.
Yeah, I followed it pretty closely, but I think we'll see. We'll see. I'm cautiously optimistic, I should say.
Okay, good. Good, good, good. Well, listen, thank you so much for kicking off our first true crime episode. We have a mutual, my producer who's, you know, works in this field as well and worked for the Jane Doe show on Oxygen, who booked you on the show. We're so excited. So for those listeners, for people listening, I guess the first thing I would say is, can you just explain, like, in layman terms?
Sure.
In dummy terms, forensic genealogy or investigative genealogy, tell us exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. You sound good.
Okay. Yeah. Well, essentially, I guess the starting point is actually just when people research their own ancestry, like they want to mm-hmm. find out who their great grandparents are or further back. And so they're applying the same techniques. I mean, many of the same people who started in consumer consumer ancestry services or their own hobbies sort of went into this. It's just the difference is you're instead of course, finding your ancestor, you're finding the ancestor of a prospective killer or missing person. That's kind of what it is.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, so DNA really, when did DNA start, just finding DNA samples being used? Was that in the late 80s or before
yeah,
that?
I think
when
so.
You could, yeah.
I'm not strictly familiar with the exact timeline, but I mean, I remember, I'm old enough to remember the O.J. Simpson case.
Oh,
of
yeah.
course. And, I mean, now we're talking, one major difference is you're talking a million times more markers than that, or
mm-hmm,
even more than
mm-hmm.
that. So you have so much
yeah.
more information. That's
because when I watch, you know, when you watch some of the true crime shows, and if it's a case that's, you know, back in the 70s or whatever, they'll say, well, at this time, you know, DNA testing was not advanced enough. And then they started with, I guess, the database. But when you now, with the popularity of like 23andMe and MyHeritage and those kind of companies, so what's basically mm-hmm. happening is when you're looking at a case, you can take. That's a question I have. Are all of those public companies that people are using, are they? Do they have to cooperate with investigators?
No.
And no, okay.
No, they don't. I mean, of course, the way that it started, as you may know, is that someone uploaded a sample to GEDmatch, which is sort of a publicly
mm-hmm.
accessible database. That's how it was done. But, yeah, they don't – 23andMe has a very strict policy of fighting most of their subpoenas. They can speak for themselves, of course, but
right,
they like
right.
to draw a very, very bright line there between – consumer work and forensic work.
Okay, got it. So let me just ask you, let's talk about your journey and all of this. How did this start
mm-hmm.
for you? What's your background?
Well, I had a group of, actually it was really people, we had all tested with 23andMe back in 2008, 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the impetus of it because we had actually bumped into each other on discussion boards, and the group of us that were sort of affiliated wanted to build our own software, right? And that's kind of how the company developed later, like right around 2012, 2013. So that was kind of – that was the elevation of the company. My background, I got interested in genetics further back. I was actually in a class in 2006, as I remember, and someone put a slide up from a genealogy site in the course, and that's when I started to realize how powerful it could be. But I got
mm-hmm.
into it. I got into it from a different angle, but later we got into it because we wanted to do things that 23andMe wasn't doing. Basically, that's kind of what we wanted to do. Really.
Right. And prior to you forming your company, Full Genomes, had you already been working with law enforcement on cases or did
no,
that
No, no,
come...
we actually, yeah, it was sort of a, it was sort of an offshoot of what we were already doing because what we
mm-hmm.
were doing, we were trying to provide a very precise measurement for people so that instead of getting, you're getting about 1,000 times more information than with a 23andMe test. So you can be very precise about your ancestry and about what people are getting from it. And so we
right.
were actually contacted by some groups, and they were interested in our technology because they were aware of the fact of what we were doing for consumers could also be used for law enforcement. That's what happened.
And I guess I mentioned the Golden State Killer at the beginning of the show because
mm-hmm.
I guess that's sort of the most I don't know if it's still the most sort of well known case that was solved
mm-hmm.
with genetics. That was a similar situation, right, where the investigators were able to use the genetics. It was they traced it back to a brother, or how close did it get to the killer?
Yeah, I don't.
I mean,
that was a really tough one because they had to go back. They had to build a tree with like 5,000 people on it. I remember the exact number. but it was over a year and a half worth of work. It was a very the actual part that where they did the genealogy was very time intensive, and they actually were working on we were independently working on a Doe case at the same time. I wasn't aware they were doing it, but we were working on the Marsha King case at the same time, which was a murder case. But
And that's another fascinating aspect is the Doe cases. You know, talk to us a little bit, because that's a whole other genre itself. In how recent is that in using genealogy to identify, for people who don't know, Jane Doe or Does are unidentified bodies, and that once you can hopefully identify the body, you start to piece together potential motives and trying to find who, if they were murdered, and if so, who did it, right?
Yeah, that was actually 2017, as I recall, because what had happened is we had done a service for a person whose father had died, right? And he had a tissue sample from his father, and so we wanted to do is he wanted to get a genealogy profile for his father, and then he wrote that up on a blog. And when he posted the blog, then the Doe people contacted us because they read the blog post. And they said, well, you did this for this one person. We'd like to do it for missing persons instead. That's how it developed. And to be honest, I was a little skeptical originally. I was like, are you really going to be able to get – I thought there might be like a one in a hundred chance per case. Yeah.
Well, and when you talk about a team, you know, what I've been fascinated by too, sometimes when I'm sort of a junkie with, you know, all the different, you know, true crime shows. The thing I'm always fascinated by is the way there'll be many different people working on one case. How is it all coordinated? I mean, it's fascinating to me that you will have people all over the country working when I always think working together is like, is one person sort of in charge and everyone else is investigating, or it seems kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, it depends on the group. I mean I've worked with a couple agencies in California, and what'll happen is, you know, what usually happens with the police agency is that we'll provide them with the profile, right, the DNA result. And then they'll launch the investigation. There might be cases where he or she will ask a question, or there'll be something they want to clarify. But they kind of like to run with the ball when they're doing that part of it. But with the Doe cases, yeah, there'll be similar things. The Doe cases are usually harder because they have they seem to be harder for some reason. Maybe that's a generalization, but
And every state is different, right? Each state has does each state have their own laws regarding Does and that and genealogy, how they deal with it?
Yeah, New York is very different. New York has a very strict protocol in terms of the type of lab that's used, and they also have a very, you know, there's a lot more concern, at least from what I could gather, in New York State about. They have a strong, you know, which is a good thing, a strong civil liberties movement. And so there's a certain amount of skepticism. But, you know, I point out to people, by the way, and I think I sent you the case. You know, people have been exonerated already. Ricky Davis spent 15 years in prison for something he didn't do. You know.
Well, That's what I was going to go on. You're right. On the flip side of, you know, of DNA and finding the guilty, it's also exonerated people, which is the upside, you know, the really great part. So your company, by the way, everyone, if you're just joining us, we're talking to Justin Lowe. His company is at, well, can they find you at Full Genomes Corporation Corporation on Instagram, right?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm usually We're a little bit less visible on Instagram. We have a Facebook page, of course. I think that's usually the best place to reach us, to be honest.
And then you have your website, of course, as well, right?
Right, yeah. And how should I put it? But yeah, I mean, we've worked. I mean, just to mention the thing with the Ricky Davis case, and I had a debate with a person without mentioning their name who's, you know, a very strong privacy advocate who was very worried about all this. And I just was trying to point out, you know, that could be any of us. I mean, Ricky Davis was actually, he was sadly convicted because his, there was a false confession, basically. And that could have happened to anybody, you know, so you can be concerned about privacy. But
that happens so much, you know.
Yeah. So I felt pretty good about that case, and there's a couple other good ones, but I think that's one of the better ones, really.
Yeah, it's your place. The listeners can actually, they can just Google that case, right? There's lots of press on it. They can see for themselves what the circumstances were.
Yeah, it was a Ricky Davis in El Dorado County, over near Sacramento. It was basically just a false confession by his girlfriend, unfortunately. Anyway.
Right. Are you also, I mean, is it the kind of thing where because you work in this industry, the last thing you really want to watch on TV are true crime shows? You know how it's kind of like, do you still like watching the various programs?
Oh yeah, no, I'm a fan. I mean, I like all the old, you know, like Sherlock Holmes and various spy series and so forth and so on, and things like Wallander, if you've heard of that one from Sweden.
Yeah.
So I've followed them. I mean, I used to catch. There used to be a show on CNN. What was it called? Forensic Files.
Oh yeah,
I catch that every
That's
day.
That was a good one. Have you testified? Have you had to testify in court proceedings and cases?
No, it hasn't come up. I mean, what's happened, I think, in at least two of the cases I know of is that the suspect confesses because it's definitive. You know, it's a match. So there's not really any need. I had thought of it. I mean, it's not really it hasn't arisen, but yeah, it hasn't happened to us yet.
Right.
Thus far.
Right. So when people when people reach out to your company, do actual just individual private citizens reach out as well?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, sometimes we had a case. I mean, for other purposes, sadly, there was it was a good thing for him, but there was a case where a gentleman, his daughter had been murdered, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it was different. They already had caught the perpetrator, but because he knew we could work with degraded samples and DNA samples of that type, you know, we were able to provide him with the data he wanted. But yeah, there'll be private individuals sometimes. Sometimes there'll be agencies. Sometimes there'll be people who are just, they want to sequence some old family heirloom or something.
So it kind of runs the full gamut, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, there's sort of an informal referral network. We're kind of a small organization, so I haven't really pressed it too publicly, but I mean, there's some other opportunities to do some bigger projects, even like for, you know, old war crimes, you know, like from the Spanish Civil War.
Wow. Yeah.
Because you can apply the same thing to bone samples from that, for example.
Well, I was going to ask you, too, like, what do you see? I mean, because it just seems like the whole genealogy just keeps advancing and advancing. How do you see it going further in the future? I mean, what do you see the progress looking like?
Well, I mean, you can almost do some, without being too speculative, you could do stuff almost in real time, you know? I mean, if someone commits, I think there was one case that someone else did like that, but if someone, let's say someone commits a murder and they get a sample from the scene, you know, the crime could have happened yesterday and we could be working on it. Right. And then you'd be working on it in real time to find the suspect rather than trying to solve like a Golden State Killer case from
from way back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think because of also scripted TV shows, you know, people watch those. Right. And they're I think it's really affects jurors and juries now too, because they've come to expect, like, they want that direct DNA match, or, you know, they need to, you know, they need the body. They need, you know, they need all these things that they watch. The problem with a lot of the scripture shows, of course, they tidy it all up with a bow, you know, in 45 minutes of a show, and they don't really show how long it can take to actually, like, to identify just a doe body can take months and months to a year even, or longer, right?
Yeah, I think for the Newton Chandler case, you know, we don't usually do the genealogy, are involved in the genealogy component, but I think that team spent 2,000 hours doing the investigation, something like that.
That's amazing.
And that was a curious one, because they thought that he might be the Zodiac killer. I don't think so, but they were thinking he might be. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading about that too. There was some speculation.
And it just didn't, just briefly, without getting into too many details, I felt he didn't fit the profile, because he had a very, there was an anecdote about him where he drove from Ohio to Maine and decided not to get out of his car and turn back.
Mm.
Right. So it didn't really seem to me to fit the profile of a, you know, of an aggressive person.
Right.
I mean, it's a little hard to generalize from one thing, but I didn't think that was. I didn't think that was the case. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating, you know, just where technology is and where it's allowed us to go. And like you said about exonerating, it's – why do you think – this is just a question too. Like, why is it so hard a lot of times for prosecutors? It seems like with prosecutors in particular, or DAs, even in the face of, like, overwhelming evidence or whatever, they never seem to want to – it's really hard for them to admit mistake made. You know, they always say, well, based on what we had at the time or whatever. It's so irritating sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's – I think part of it is I mean, I suppose it's like anything else. I mean, no one likes to admit that they put someone away.
Right.
I mean, do you like to admit that you really did get a zero on the course or something, or dropped?
Right. It's the ego and the pride, you know. But you just think, God, when the stakes are so high and you've put some, you know, someone's went to jail for 25 years,
mm-hmm.
you would think at that point you would. I mean, it does happen where they. Mm-hmm. They make amends and they apologize, but it seems more than likely they just kind of dig their feet in and they're like, nope, you know, this is what we had at the time and that's mm-hmm. the best we can do. So
just to make a point there. I mean, I there was a documentary from a number of years ago about Chicago. I don't know if you know the story, where they had like 100 cases that were overturned.
No,
the governor did a large-scale commutation of sentences, as I remember. And there was a whole documentary on the fact that in Chicago, they almost had a quota system, right? So if they wanted to solve the crime so that they had a large rate of cases that the governor didn't have a lot of confidence in. And I remember watching that documentary. It'll come to me later. But after I saw that documentary, that really made a big impact on me personally. Because I just thought, if the rate's 5% or 10%, that's way too much. Yeah, you just can't have the death penalty. You can't even have
Mm-mm.
you can have a whole debate on that, which is a different topic. But it really, when you saw that they were basically trying to get, you know, a scorecard, right? They wanted a scorecard of a perfect number of hits. And so that's what they were doing, unfortunately. So.
Wow. Well, again, a lot of times, you know, politics come into play with all that too, and that, you know, it's always mm-hmm. amazing that they're gambling with someone's livelihood, their life, basically, and that's what happens. So, so in terms of when we watch mm-hmm. a show like on Oxygen, where we watch how teams work and they identify a doe body. Where it's one thing, okay, you can identify them, and then when you, how does it go from there to then trying to use genealogy to identify the killer? That's where I get a little confused sometimes.
Well, you've got a, I guess this, what you have is you'll get a some type of a sample, right? You'll get like a tissue sample or a bone sample or hair or fingernails or something. And then you can
right.
take that and you generate a profile similar to like a 23andMe file. And then from that, you can then generate something that you can upload to a database.
Got
but
it. Okay.
But the step that goes from the tissue or the bone is where the software comes in, where you have various techniques, I suppose.
And does, I mean, decomposition mm-hmm. varies, right? I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
are there cases where decomposition is so bad that you absolutely cannot get anything
right.
usable?
Yeah, those are tough situations because there was one case, actually, I probably shouldn't, I won't mention the name, but
uh-huh.
they really wanted to do it. They really wanted to do it. It was a bad case. I mean, it was a real tragedy, and it's just when 99% of the data is gone, you're just not going to be able to get there, you know.
Yeah, so you need a certain amount of tissue and bone. Is you need all that to be able to work with.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can work with. I mean, we've worked with some pretty. Well, I can say. I mean, you could work with something from a bullet casing. If someone touches
mm-hmm.
a bullet,
mm,
or touches
okay.
a bottle. You can
right.
work with something that, like in the Chandler case, he actually had a tissue biopsy, so it was preserved in formaldehyde, so it was degraded, right? So you can work with a lot of tricky stuff. It's just there still is a ceiling, you know,
mm-hmm.
there still is or floor, whatever, however you want to put it, where you just can't,
right. There's a
can't
there's
do
a
the
top,
beyond.
Yeah. Well, do you know a lot of times you hear about people
mm-hmm.
burning bodies, thinking that burning a body is going to destroy evidence. That's not really the case, right?
Yeah, well, it still get there. I mean, it just depends. It depends on the particular circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they worked. I mean, there's some that were done that. I think there was one recently that was burned. The name escapes, but there was a recent case that we did in North Carolina where they found a body in an old farmhouse, and I think it was a suicide, and then the body had been burned.
This is what's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about just how many missing persons there are in the country. You know, it's I'm always astounded
mm-hmm.
because, you know, our mutual friend who worked on the oxygen. He doesn't
mm-hmm.
like his name out there, but you know, we talked about how many people are missing and just like never thought of. I mean, it's fascinating to me how someone can be missing for so long, and I don't know if it's just people quit looking or they assume they're never going to find them. You know, I don't know. It's just.
Mm-hmm.
It blows my mind because sometimes when you
yeah.
solve it mm-hmm. and then you talk to the families and you start realizing like, well, wait, so they had a child and they had a ex-husband and what were those people told? You know, it's just a whole domino effect.
Yeah. In the Lyle Stevick case, for example, the family just assumed he just didn't want to be contacted. There was a suicide up near Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a pseudonym, as I remember, it was from a novel or something. And they didn't even know he was dead. Sadly.
Yeah, and you know, in today, especially today, how we all, whether we want to or not, you know, we stay so connected between social media and texting, and you know, it just, I guess it's fascinating to me because I'm thinking, gosh, I don't know, if you said today, oh, I just don't want to be, you know, connect. I just don't want to be contacted. It's like, I don't think that would stop people from trying to find you in today, you know, current day. I bet it was much more prevalent, obviously, 20 years ago.
Yeah, I kind of wonder about, I mean, the curious one, like in the Newton Chandler case, he took the name of a boy who died in a car accident in 1946, as I remember, because it was for a variety of reasons easier to do then,
mm-hmm.
to get the birth certificate and to get the records. And he cut himself off from his entire family, which is very unusual psychologically, because most people, that's why it was a red flag for the police. I just didn't understand that.
It didn't make sense. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I do find a lot of times in these cases, going back, there is something, I guess it's easier, you find a dead child's, even their mm-hmm. social security number and stuff like that, for some reason that's easier to do, I guess. I'm not sure what that's about. But again, I don't know if it's as easy today as it was, 10, 15 years ago. But people find ways around everything, I guess, or they try to.
I don't know. I don't have since I'm not in law enforcement, I don't actually have access.
Right.
There's parts of these investigations that the law enforcement just does themselves. So they'll say elliptically that they have access to other databases, of course, that they can use and so forth and so on. But I would imagine it would be a lot harder. I mean, maybe I'm wrong to do what Chandler did to take on a different identity. Yeah, I think
today's time. Yeah.
Yeah. What he did is today you could just Google it and you'd find that person,
mm-hmm.
that name was associated
right.
with someone who died in 1946. In
right.
the old days,
pretty
you go
much.
To the library and you spend years trying to find that out.
Do you find, there was a lot of, were you hit with skepticism from law enforcement in the beginning? Do you find law enforcement now sees genealogy investigation as a really great tool and they're all on board? But is there still pushback at all or skepticism or anything from law enforcement?
I think everyone's seen the cases in the news. I mean, I talked to one agency recently and sort of gave them a briefing and I guess sort of a proof of concept history of how it could be done. I mean, because they're trying to convince more and more people within their organization to fund this and to move forward. Mm-hmm. California, by the way, is very aggressive. The California agencies are very, shall I say, out in front in terms of
mm-hmm.
implementing this, which is kind of curious to me, but it just depends on the group. I think it's usually the point person is a district attorney. So if you have a district attorney who's very aggressive, then they'll drive it forward. It doesn't really, as far as I know, it's not coming from the political level.
That was going to be my question. Mm-hmm. Do you find, that was my question. Do you find it more Republican based? It's less enthusiastic, because there's so many privacy issues or people are always afraid of. I mean, I still hear today, like people find out I did MyHeritage, .com, mm-hmm. I used MyHeritage, and I have friends that'll say, "Oh, Jasper, you got to be careful because, someone can plant your, they can use that against you or, they can use that against you down the line or something, the authorities can take that." And so I think we can debunk that theory,
they don't need
right?
MyHeritage. They don't need MyHeritage. I'm sorry to break it to you, but if they want to, I had a conversation once with someone, people, there's reasonable concerns, but if you think about it, if they really wanted to employ all their techniques to find out information on someone, they have so many different electronic and they can pull everyone's records from social media and all sorts of other places. So I'm
right.
There's a legitimate concern there, but I think also that, this was a point I was trying to make to one other person who was from Europe who was so concerned. It's like, you do realize that if they really wanted to, they could basically pull out your entire email history for your entire life, right? They could just get
right.
all those records. So
yeah, it's fat. Yeah, exactly. We're really not as private as we think we are. We're not as really protected as people think we are anyway. So I always say, look, my life's so boring. You can just, follow me if you want. It's going to be very pleasantly surprised at how boring it is. So have at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's possible. It's always possible there could be some curveball that emerges,
mm-hmm.
right? But I think some of the more science fiction based fears that, you know, they'll copy your DNA and plant it at the crime scene, you know, I think that's pretty unlikely for the time being.
Yeah, that's very unlikely. Exactly. Yeah. Well, Justin, listen, the time flies. I just wanted to thank you again to be our first guest, and much continued success with Full Genomes, your company, and you know, mm-hmm. I'm a fan of this whole genre and industry and fascinated by it. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom with us, and please come back anytime.
Yeah, thanks so much. I enjoyed it a lot. Good deal.
Thanks, buddy. Okay, take care. Fun. Have a good
Bye.
One. Bye-bye. Wow. That's Justin Lowe, his company, Full Genomes Corporation, and you can find his website, fullgenomes.com. Look him up, see what the company does. They offer all kinds of genetic testing. They work with law enforcement. So listen, guys, I am so excited to have our first true crime episode in the can. Like I said, we're going to try to do at least one of these a month. So many avenues in the true crime genre, you know, with actual victims and detectives and investigators, and so much to talk about and so many great shows. I'd like to get some people on from Dateline and 48 Hours and all the shows that we all love and watch. So everyone, thank you again. Be safe out there. Please get your vaccinations. When your number comes up, when your appointment comes and you have a chance, make sure you get vaccinated. Follow us. I'm at Jasper Cole Says, SAYS on Instagram and on Twitter. And we have a Facebook page, One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Or go to jaspercole.com and you can follow the show there. Shout out to our host page, BS Podcast Network. And you can get all of our archive shows on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, and of course, right here at Blog Talk Radio. So thanks to Ralph Cole Jr. We'll see you all next week. Same time, same place. Be safe. Much love. Bye-bye.
Thanks for checking out One-on-One with Jasper Cole. Check out past episodes and get the latest as they're released. Subscribe today on iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube.